Gaur Mohan didn't want Abhay to do something he would later regret. He had always tried to plan the best for his son. But Abhay was 23 and would have to make this decision for himself. Gaur Mohan thought of the future. The horoscope said that his son would be a great religious preacher at age 70. But Gaur Mohan did not expect to live to see it. Still, he had every reason to accept the horoscope as accurate, and he wanted to prepare Abhay. He tried to plan things accordingly, but there was no way to guess what Krishna would do. Everything depended upon Krishna, and Krishna was above nationalism, above planning and the laws of astrology, and above the desires of a modest cloth merchant aspiring to make his son a pure devotee of Srimati Radharani, and a preacher of Srimad Bhagavatam. Although Gaur Mohan had always allowed Abhay to do what he wanted, he had also carefully guided him always on the path he knew best. Now, without interfering with Abhay's decisions about college, Gaur Mohan set about to arrange good employment for him, regardless of what else might happen. In 1920, Abhay completed his fourth year of college and took the BA exam. Afterwards, with the ordeal of final examinations behind him, he took a short vacation. To fulfill a long-cherished desire, he traveled alone a day's journey by train to Jagannath Puri, Srila Prabhupada. Every day of my boyhood, I used to think how to go to Jagannath Puri and how to go to Vrindavan. At that time, the fare was, for Vrindavan, 4 or 5 rupees, and similarly for Jagannath Puri. So I was thinking, when shall I go? I took the first opportunity to go to Jagannath Puri. So we can see from this situation that that Srila Prabhupada's in is that his father was he was just interested that he becomes a devotee of Srimati Radharani and a preacher of Bhagavatam. He didn't actually have any other idea for his son. He didn't want him to be too absorbed in the modern lifestyle and this and that, but he was seeing according to what was available that he could get him educated, right? He didn't have a gurukul there, he didn't have this, that. So, you know, he educated him how he felt that he could take care of himself, right? But we see is that the emphasis was not on the taking care of himself as much as on being a good devotee. So now he went to the school, you know, he's growing up in the regular society there and all that, but we see that then Srila Prabhupada is taking, you know, he's coming up with all the right decisions. He gets distracted now and again, you know, and his school is so much work and all that. But, you know, he takes up proper worship of his deity. He's always thinking how to go to Vrindavan. You know, he's looking at the different things, you know, from a perspective of how to be Krishna conscious or how to spread Krishna consciousness, right? Even his interest in nationalism was the idea that if India is practicing its own culture, then it's so much easier to establish, you know, the Vedic philosophy and tradition than if everybody's madly running after, you know, some British concept of what human life is. Does that make sense? Right? So then, but so he's going through in a situation that most others are also going through, but they're not coming up with this result, right? So many others are from the Mullet family and others from their community and educated, and they're all from good families. But you don't see the necessarily the progress in devotional services being made. So we can see that that means that the home environment, the mood of his father, the mood of the parents, is that of devotional service. That is the prominent element for them. That is what they're most worried about. Does that make sense? So that will flavor the whole thing. And so therefore, even though the education and all these things may take up more time, they're actually secondary. Because that's the way they are in the mind of the parents. Does this make sense? So it's not just what you do, it's the environment in which it's done that makes a difference. Does that make sense?
Yes.
What do you think? What do you think about the environment? You know, do you think that we should be worried about the, global warming or the ozone hole or anything like that? Or, you know, that the,
the frogs are all dying.
The frogs are dying. The blue-tailed woogie bird is
extinct.
Yeah, extinct, along with the dodo. So what's your opinion? You know, what do you think we should... What is your message for the leaders of the world? Basically, watch out for the pump at the end of the slide on the like that.
Watch out for pump 4.
Pump 4, yeah. And make sure after the pump you don't fall in the drain. And if you do, not face down because it's harder to get out. If you're in sideways, you can more easily be pulled out, right? Yes? He's not revealing.
But that pump is... remember, I was telling you the story about Bihari Lal and Gyan Das. His stick is called Gyan Das. His teacher's stick was called Gyan Das.
Okay, yeah,
that,
yeah.
That pump actually is also Gyan Das.
Oh, okay.
Because if the boy is mistreated,
it kicks back. Okay.
And quite a few kids have like
had that. Yeah, all you have to do is just push at the speed the water comes. But they somehow, if you push quicker, it'll be. You know, it's just like this. It's like if you put in a little bit of food, chew it, and they swallow it. If you put in a whole ton of food where there's no more can fit in your mouth, can you chew? No. So is it quicker? No. So it's the same way with the pump. Yes? What's your opinion? You have an opinion? You don't know what an opinion is. I see. Okay. He walked along the same broad street where for thousands of years the Rathayatra procession had passed. In the market, shops displayed small carved and painted wooden murtis of Lord Jagannath. Although it was not Rathayatra season, tourists were purchasing souvenirs, and in the temple they purchased Jagannath Prasadam. In the Jagannath temple, 56 gigantic offerings of cooked rice and vegetables were presented daily in worship before the deities of Jagannath, Balaram and Subhadra. Abhaya entered the temple and saw the deities. So this 56, the Chapan Bhog, then... You've seen locally how they use it? Some say is that at one offering there's 56 preps. Some say throughout the day there's 56 preparations.
Here they do one time, 56.
Where?
Jagannath.
Oh. And in these other temples, these other Bengali temples?
I think they have all at once, and then over actually throughout the day, it's even more than this.
Oh, okay. Okay. So the chapan bhog basically means the lunch offering.
The rajbhog.
The rajbhog, okay. You want to say something there? So he had his hand is always wandering up and doing something. You have to hold on to it, you know, like that. Gives you trouble. You know? Okay. Abhai entered the temple and saw the deities. On a side altar stood the murti of Lord Chaitanya in his six-armed form, manifesting himself simultaneously as Krishna, Rama, and the sannyasi, Lord Chaitanya. You saw?
No.
Said Bhuj? Says he's on the side there.
There might be on the back. I'm not sure if there's a painting or like a relief.
Oh, okay. Because I heard all around there's all kinds of little deities and stuff.
Yeah, they're all it's carved.
I'm not sure. I just you hear various things.
Yeah, because you go in and there's the main temple.
Mm-hmm.
And then inside the temple there's like three, not really, I mean maybe mandaps, but they're inside the temple. Mm-hmm. And then if you're at the end, one end, then there's the
Garudastamba,
and then on the top to the back left of that there's a place where Mahaprabhu would stand.
Mm-hmm.
A Jagannath.
Mm-hmm.
So I think maybe there but I can't recall. And then outside the temple as you go around, and there's all small temples for different Ganesh or, you know, Kali.
Okay, on the outside of the temple.
Yeah, you know, like on the inside of the wall, but on the outside of the main Jagannath temple.
Okay, okay.
And you do buy it. I can't remember seeing it.
Oh, okay.
For sure it's there.
Okay. Okay.
That's quite far also from where Mahaprabhu will stand to Jagannath.
Oh.
Yeah.
I heard you can only see half of Jagannath.
If you're right there, you can... Yeah.
Lord Chaitanya was famous in Puri, where he had spent the last 18 years of his life conducting Hare Krishna Kirtan with his followers and dancing ecstatically at the yearly Ratha Yatra as the carts were wheeled along the main road, surrounded by thousands of devotees. Lord Chaitanya had danced and swooned in the ecstasy of his intense love and separation from Lord Krishna. Passing over the parade route, Abhai recalled his own childhood pastimes, singing and dancing in the street, the miniature cart, the procession, Jagannath smiling, his father and mother, Radha Govinda. Somehow the fame of Lord Jagannath had inspired him as a child, and it had remained with him all these years. Quote, when shall I go to Jagannath Puri? His childhood dreaming of Puri and Vrindavan, and is compulsively studying the train tables, scheming since the age of five to travel there, were based on more than just a desire to tour Puri's marketplace, and he was not satisfied by once seeing the deity in the noisy, crowded temple. He had been impelled to come to Puri as a pilgrim, and his motive was his devotion to Krishna. Now nationalism was strongly influencing his life, and he had recently married and was facing the decisions of graduation and career. Yet here he was, hardly more than a boy, walking alone in Puri, where Lord Chaitanya had lived and where Lord Krishna, as Jagannath, still resided. Abhai relished his break from the pressures of duties in Calcutta. He didn't know how the love he felt for Krishna and Krishna's pilgrimage place would fit into his life. He knew that Krishna was more important than anything else. He was God, the supreme controller, and everyone's inner guide. But there was so much token, superficial service to God. Even the nationalist speakers, although they carried the Gita on their person, were more intent on nationalism than on Krishna. Only those who were sincere devotees knew the importance and attraction of Krishna, people like his father. An odd incident occurred at Puri. Gaur Mohan had given Abhay a letter of introduction to an acquaintance who lived in Jagannath Puri. Abhay went to see him and was well received. When the man was offering him lunch, however, Abhay noticed a small lump within one of the cooking pots. He questioned his host, who replied, "Oh, it is meat." Abhay was unable to restrain his shock. "No, what is this? I have never taken meat." Abhay looked at his host in astonishment. "I never expected this at Jagannath Puri." Ashamed, his host said, "I did not know. I thought this was the best." Abhay pacified the man, but he put his food aside and took no more meals there. After that, Abhay ate only the Jagannath Prasadam from the temple. I think the man also mentioned, because he thought he was Bengali, so just automatically it meant he was, you know, they were eating meat. So he didn't know, he just thought that that was would be, that's why he said he thought it was the best. Abhay stayed at Puri for 3 or 4 days, wandering about the holy places and visiting the famous Puri seaside, with its sparkling beach and strongly pounding surf. Several times he recognized some of the priests from the Jagannath temple as they smoked cigarettes. And he heard of other unsavory activities of the sadhus connected with the temple. What kind of sadhus were these who ate fish with their Jagannath prasad and smoked? In this respect, he found Jagannath Puri disappointing. When Abhay returned home, he found his young wife crying. Then he heard how her friends had told her, "Your husband is not coming back." Like that, see? So it always goes on. Just harass. He's not coming back. He told her not to worry. There was no truth in the story. He had only gone for a few days and was now back. Although his marriage had only recently begun, Abhay was dissatisfied. Radharani Dutta was an attractive young girl, but Abhay had never really liked her. He was thinking maybe a different wife would be better, a second wife besides this one. In India, it was socially acceptable to marry a second wife. So Abhay decided to take the matter into his own hands. He made arrangements to approach the parents of another girl. But when his father heard about it, he called Abhay and said, "My dear boy, you are eager to take a second wife, but I would advise you not to. It is Krishna's grace that your present wife is not to your liking. Take it as a good, great fortune. If you do not become too attached to your wife and family, that will help you in your future advancement in spiritual life." Abhay accepted his father's advice. He wanted to obey his father, and he appreciated the saintly viewpoint. But he remained thoughtful, a bit awed by his father's forethought, and he wondered how one day in the future he would be advancing in spiritual life and be grateful that his father had done this. "Your future advancement in spiritual life," Abhay liked the idea. He reconciled himself to the wife he had been given. Because there's always the idea that the boy wants to be very attracted to the girl. If it's, you know, naturally there, that's fine. But the element is that the principle is that when the girl is attracted to the boy, that's the strongest thing. That's why in the marriage arrangements, and you're always looking at, it's more the girl's choice rather than the boy's choice. Because then the girl will be very fixed and everything in that relationship. Otherwise, if it's the boy that's very enamored and the girl's not, then you have the problem of the girl won't be very satisfied, right? And if she's not happy, then nothing's going to be happy like that. Does that make sense? So that's an important point here. So his father's pointing that out in that way, because then he will be able to, you know, perform his duties nicely and everything, but at the same time as he'll be able to see things in a spiritual perspective. Otherwise, he may get too distracted. So we see the father's worried that he gets everything, he can take care of everything nicely. So he's married, he's taking care of all these things. So in his devotional service, he can move forward nicely. But at the same time, he doesn't want him to get distracted by the whole process. Does that make sense? Yes? What do you think? Do you think? Ah, okay, very good. See, he thinks. Okay, so what do you think? It's 2.5 hours till Prashad, or... The girl is happy, okay.
Right, if the boy, that means it's good. If the, that means a good relationship. If the boy is happy and the girl's not happy, that won't work.
Yes. You know what I'm saying? Because the point is that the boy, by his training in that, he has to create the environment, right? So that means you have to work with whatever's there. That's the meaning. Right? So, therefore, the boy is able to make those adjustments to make everything work. Does that make sense? Because then he is being sensitive. It's actually for his development. Right? Girl is already sensitive, but if the boy is not aware of her needs, then this situation can't work. Does that make sense? That's why you always, you know, clean. You do different things. You do something and then how well you clean. Do you leave dirt here and there? Do you not pick it all up? Do you, you know, when you mop the floor, do you leave gaps? All these things are symptoms of how well you'll do in your life. You understand? If you can't sweep the floor properly or pick up the garbage or wipe the floor properly, you won't be able to run your family properly either. It's not that, oh, it's just wiping the floor, so it doesn't matter. No. That's where it matters. If you can't see that you missed a spot on the floor, you won't be able to see that you missed a point or an emotion or a need of your family. It's that simple. You know what I'm saying? So that's why all these different things. You know, you wash the pot, you leave some of the stuff on there, don't rinse it properly, aren't careful where you put it down, so you put it in a place that's not actually clean. You know what I'm saying? You're not careful about that your hands are, you know, dirty from touching the one pot, and then you touch a clean pot. You understand all these things? Or, you know, the chaunts, you know, you don't get it the right color. It's you do this, forgot something, run off, come back, you burn it. All these things are symptoms that you're going to have problem later in your life. So when all these things work very smoothly and nicely, like that, and at the same time, then you don't have to think about that. You can think of what's beyond that. Then you'll be successful. But until that time, it's going to be trouble. Yes?
Suma, is that the reason why there is 75% divorce rate? Because boys don't do this kind of services anymore?
Basically. Because, see, previously is that because the cultures were more... I'm not sure how you'd say it, but they were more... close to being involved in the creation of their environment. You know what I'm saying? They would be building their own houses or doing their own farming or, you know, some way they'd be more, the whole concept of the lifestyle was more complete rather than just, my purpose is to enjoy and therefore you have to have a job or this or that to do that, but that's not really what you're doing. But before it was a you had your occupation, you take care of everything, and in that, you know, you'd be happy. So the boys from a much younger age, generally from like around 12, would be much more involved in practical things. You know, so they would be, they would have to become much more aware, so it wasn't just they were just playing all the time. You know what I'm saying? Because... see, if you're dealing with something that you're trying to get a specific result, you have to be sensitive to it. Then you're able to deal with, you know, when it's going nicely or not nicely. You don't become disturbed. Right? The situation is not nice, you work to make it proper. The situation is nice, you work to keep it that way. Right? But if all you do is play all the time, you don't take responsibility, then you're dealing also with this nice, not nice, but somehow or another when you're playing, much of the time things that aren't nice somehow or another are still considered fun. You know, like bumping into pump four. You know, everybody laughs like that, or, you know, You know, because half of the time when the kids are playing, somebody is yelling and screaming in pain. And somehow everybody thinks it's a great time. You know, I'm not exactly sure how it works, but, you know. But the problem is that when they get older, then if when they were a kid, then whether it's nice or not nice, it's still fun. Then why is it when they're adult, it's not the same thing? Then they think it's always got to be nice. And if anything's not nice, then it's not good. You know what I'm saying? The kids are running, you know, falling on their face, falling in the mud, ripping their clothes, this, that. It's all fun. You know what I'm saying? Playing a game, they fall over, you know, hit themselves, get bruised, but it's all fun. But when they become adult, if anything doesn't go right, then it's a problem. It's everybody else's. Something's wrong with everybody else. You understand? So they're not learning actually how to deal with material energy. Though it's said to be, but in a classroom that you're dealing with subject matter that doesn't necessarily have any relevance or much relevance to your life by somebody who is teaching it, who has much of a chance that he also, it doesn't have any relevance in his life other than he teaches it to you and then that's how he maintains himself. And somehow or another, that's supposed to be real life, that's supposed to be real. While being practical and being out and being involved in proper relationships in a more balanced social environment, that's considered more backwards or, you know, you understand? So it's a very unique mentality that people aren't actually being trained and don't even know what training is. Like that.
The funny thing now is that you have like a section of tourism where these people that you're talking about, they go and work. Like it's farm stay or, you know, country stay.
Oh,
they
okay.
go and are involved in, like, you know, the farmer's family, what he's doing through the day.
Uh-huh.
Horse riding or, you know, plowing the field or harvesting something. And they, you know, they're actually working, but they're paying for all of that.
They pay him, they work for him, so yeah. He gets profit there, and they pay him to be able to work for him. That's,
you know,
one smart farmer.
The work must be something a little less.
Yeah, yeah.
But that experience of doing something or
being out in the wild of nature, you know, in your family of, I mean, in the field of, you know, wheat or something.
Okay.
Okay.
And also that every culture, you know, so even of course including the Vedic culture, but have a ceremony between, like, childhood and when you become a man.
Mm-hmm.
And that ceremony usually takes place, you know, we're very young, not mm-hmm. 16 or...
No, it's generally somewhere around 12 or this or that.
Depending, I think, on puberty kicks in.
Yeah, no, generally it's there. But in the Vedic, because the element not being, it means, in other words, you are not involved in family life, so it's generally at 16 mm-hmm. that... But all the other cultures, yeah, it's like 12, 13, like that. Because they're still in the family. Because
yeah.
The Vedic says is that the child becomes responsible for their own karma. Either at the age of 16 or at 13. So 16 would be is that, you know, they're going through in proper training and proper lifestyle. So at 16 they're an adult, so therefore as an adult then the karma... They suffer the reactions, not their parents or their teacher or someone else. But if they grow up in the home environment, where basically they're growing up as grihasthas, so they're more involved in that, then at 13, then they take the reactions. Like that. So it just depends upon that kind of mood. Yeah. So yeah. Modern society doesn't have necessarily a rite of passage.
Even 30, 40 years ago, they were, you know, scouts and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, go to that.
But nowadays,
no. Yeah, unless it's something connected with a religious faith, it's not there. Yeah. And the Jews have a...
Yeah. Sometimes individual families, because they've done it, I mean, their father took them out bush, you know, when they were 13, 14.
For a walkabout,
and then they'll take their kid.
Okay.
That's kind of...
But it's not like an official acknowledged rite of passage.
My dad did this and it was good.
Individual. Yeah. Yes? No? What do you think? Deep. Abhaicharan's day's name was included on the posted list of students who had passed the BA exams and were invited to appear for their diploma. But Abhai had decided he didn't want a diploma from Scottish Church's college. Although as a graduate he would have a promising career, it would be a British-tainted career. If Gandhi succeeded, India would soon be rid of the British. Abhai had made his decision, and when graduation day arrived, the college authorities learned of his rejecting his diploma. In this way, Abhai registered his protest and signaled his response to Gandhi's call. Gandhi's protest had increased its pitch in recent months. During the war, Indians had remained loyal. So this is 1920. Right? But they didn't get independence for another 27 years. Like that. Like his idea was, is then if they freed India, because they were talking about following the Vedic culture and establishing, you know, more Vedic schools and all that, then you wouldn't need the British education. But unfortunately, the fathers of the nation, then they They kicked out the British, but kept their culture and education. So it didn't quite work out the way they had planned it.
I guess by the time it actually happened, the guys that were in power didn't have the same values as the freedom fighters in the 20s.
Yeah, or even freedom fighters when it started in the mid-1800s. Like that. Because there's more intellectual and more cultural. But then at the end, it was just purely political. So. Yeah, because remember Mukherjee?
Vaguely.
So we had a headmaster one time. He actually joined the school when he was 70. Like that. He was running his own school and everything. So then he used to work with the Indian government at the time of Nehru. And he was part of the IFS, the Indian Foreign Service, where India would send representatives overseas to deal with all these other countries and liaison with them. And he says after the independence, then when they had the first prime ministers, it was Nehru and all, then they invited different, countries to come see the situation and give advice on how they should, arrange their, political and economic kind of basis. So then he commented that basically, the Western countries, very specifically, was just saying that the American representatives came, saw India and everything, and they said that your country is, the whole economic system is rural-based. It's all in the villages, the cottage industries. He says you should, officially, support that and make that your industry. Because otherwise that's been somewhat, reduced due to the British's industrial stuff and trying to bring the whole culture into that. So the Americans were saying, reject the Western economic, industrialization, and focus on your villages and the whole that, because all your people live in the villages, so that way they'll become prosperous. But somehow or another, Nehru didn't appreciate that, and so none of the Western countries would support anything other than that. They didn't like, they didn't think India was, it was appropriate for India to industrialize. So the interesting thing is the only country that would support it was Russia and the communist countries. So therefore then India aligned itself with Russia and Czech and all these different places. Like, you know, all the machineries and everything were all from. That's why the architecture looks the way it is. You go to Russia, it's exactly what the place looks like. You know, like that. So it's interesting to note. But, you know, so that was the exact opposite of what Swaraj was aimed at and what Gandhi was trying to establish. Like that, so. Therefore, it didn't exactly work out the way it was planned. Yes? What do you think? He agrees.
Deep.
Yes. And you? Gandhi's protest had increased its pitch in recent months. During the war, Indians had remained loyal to the crown in hopes of generating British sympathy towards the cause of independence. But in 1919, England had passed the Rowlatt Act to repress the move for Indian freedom. Gandhi had then called on all Indians to observe a Hartal, a day in which people all over the country had stayed home from work and school in protest. Although it had been a nonviolent protest, 1 week later in Amritsar, in the public square known as Jallianwala Bagh, British soldiers shot to death hundreds of unarmed, defenseless Indians who had gathered for a peaceful meeting. Gandhi then lost faith, all faith, in the intentions of the empire towards India. Calling for complete non-cooperation, he ordered a boycott of everything British, commodities, schools, courts, military honors. And Abhai, in refusing his degree, was moving to align himself more closely with Gandhi's independence movement. But his heart was not in it. Just as he had never given his heart to college studies, to earning a degree, to his wife, so he was reserved about becoming a full-fledged nationalist. Abhai had become inclined towards the cause, but never really convinced. Now, out of school, out of work, caring little for his career, education, or wife, he remained at home. He tried his hand at writing poetry for the occasion of a friend's wedding. He read Srimad Bhagavatam and the latest speeches of Gandhi. He had no immediate plans. Gormohan had his plans for Abhai, and the college degree had been an integral part of those plans. But Krishna, it seemed, had other plans. The political protest of refusing the Bachelor of Arts degree was more a mark of honor than a social stigma, and Gormohan did not reproach his son for it. But Abhai still needed to take up some kind of work. Gormohan approached his friend Kartik Bose and asked him to employ Abhai. Right, so in other words, in the British circle or in those who are very dependent upon him, then it would be a social stigma. It means, in other words, it would be looked down upon that he didn't have a degree. But in the Indian circles, or in the intellectual Indian circles, then it was more of a honor that he had had that commitment to the, I say, to the Indian cause, like that. So then, you know, it worked for him that it, you know, because others who are, other Indians who are favorable towards the independence would naturally be very supportive of such, ungraduates. Nothing going. Okay. Dr. Kartik Chandra Bose, an intimate friend, had been the family doctor since Abhai's childhood. He was a distinguished surgeon, a medical scholar, and a chemical industrialist. He had his own establishment, Bose's Laboratory, in Calcutta, where he manufactured drugs, soaps, and other products for the pharmaceutical industry. Dr. Bose was well known throughout India as the first Indian to manufacture pharmaceutical preparations that had formerly been monopolized by European firms. He agreed to accept Abhai as a department manager at his laboratory. Although Abhai knew little of the pharmaceutical industry or of management, he felt confident that by reading a few related books, he could learn what he needed to know. But when this new young man was suddenly given the post of department manager, several workers became dissatisfied. Some of them were elderly and had been 40 years with the firm. They voiced their dissatisfaction amongst themselves and finally confronted Dr. Bosch. Why had this young man been put in charge? Dr. Bosch replied, "Oh, for that position I needed someone I could trust like my own son. He is signing checks for 40,000 rupees. I could only entrust the personal handling of my accounts in that department to him. His father and I are very close, and this young man is known to me practically as my son." 40,000 rupees back then was big money. But he's famous in, you know, all India. Everywhere you go in India, you can find, even today, Bosch's medical. All pharmacists carry it, certain different things and this and that. Yeah, because he was the first Indian pharmaceutical, so you can be sure that all the nationalists were buying his products as opposed to the British products. Yes? What do you think? Not sure. You think? Yes. Then? Is that smoke coming out of his ears?
One day they'll say something. Anything. When's breakfast?
What do you think? It's only 9 more minutes. Okay. Because Dr. Bosch, because it was like a family, and then the problem was is that because they're Vaishyas, he couldn't be employed. Right? Vaishyas aren't employed. They run their own business or they're partners in business or something. Shudras are employed. Right? So then the point came up is, how can I be employed by you? Because he was going to be the department manager. So therefore he says, so you come in like a partner. You know, so it's like your family, so the family members work in the business. You know, he's not like a partner, meaning in the way of he controls the economics. But, you know, a member of the family works in the business. He's not a shudra. You know, the father has a cloth store and his son comes in and helps selling or doing this and that. You know, he's not that. So that's why, that's the angle he brought him in. And then because of that, then like a family member, he could trust him with all these different things, the accounts and everything that's very, very delicate. Right? Well, these others then were, you know, hired persons. So, you know, loyal and committed, but you don't have the same, what do you call it? Same trust, yeah. Gormohan felt he had done his best. His prayer was that the principles of pure Vaishnavism he had taught his son would stay with him and guide him throughout his life. Gandhi in the cause of Swaraj has disrupted Abai's college career, and Abai was still inclined towards nationalism, but not so much for a political motive as for a spiritual vision. So Gormohan was content. He knew the marriage arrangement was not pleasing to Abai, but Abai had accepted his explanation that detachment from wife and family affairs would be good for spiritual advancement. And Abai was showing an inherent disinterest in materialistic affairs. This also did not displease Gormohan, to whom business had always been subservient to his worship of Lord Krishna. He had expected this. Now Abai had a promising job and would be making the best of his marriage. Gormohan had done what he could, and he depended upon Krishna for the ultimate result. Gandhi, bolstered by his emergence as a leader amongst the Congress Party, now openly attacked the empire's exploitative cloth trade with India. So here is he's trained him, and then he's letting him make his decision. The interesting thing is that in it, he's actually doing that. He'll give advice, but it's still up to his son to take it. He'll train him. Then he'll, you know, let him make the decisions where it's his decision to make. Then if a decision he feels isn't proper, he will explain to him then what is the, you know, what is the consideration. So on that, he would have explained what about the degree, but at the same time as he understood that his cause for it was for a spiritual purpose, that he wanted to establish a Vedic India, like that. So there. You know, but on the marriage, then he said, you know, this is not good. He explained why, and then because it was on spiritual content. So the common point is the decision-making is based on spiritual content. So that, then, is the proper basis of letting your child make their decision. But they've been trained spiritually, and the decision's made on spiritual principles. Right? Not if they just want to be a yahoo and be crazy and all.
It's a complete opposite.
Yeah, it's a complete opposite.
Even within the society.
Yeah. But we see is that he still is leaving the decision to his son. So he's giving, so we could say he's very liberal. But this isn't liberal in the modern sense. This is liberal in the sense of broad-minded. So, you know, he has faith that Krishna's there, and if the proper training, people will do the right thing. Right? Oh, well. So did you enjoy it while it lasted there? Like that? England was purchasing raw cotton from India at the lowest prices, manufacturing it into cloth in the Lancashire mills in England, and then selling the monopolized cloth at high prices to the Indian millions. Right? They would force them to sell it very, very cheap. You know, India's. Then take it to England, make it there so that the English would get the benefit from it. Right? They would get the jobs, yes.
They would actually force them to grow the cotton as well.
Yeah, you had to grow cotton. You couldn't grow something else.
They weren't allowed to grow their food crops or their...
So, yeah, so you could understand why, you know, even just on day-to-day life, they were interested in independence. Because, you know, it's like they didn't, there are millions of them, so they didn't really care if a few died or even lots of them died. So that's why, as rulers, they actually, they were you could say they were good managers, but as rulers, they were probably one of the worst rulers on the planet. You know, they probably lost, because they were good managers... They gained probably the biggest empire, but because they're terrible, you know, how you say, leaders and all that, then they lost everything. And now they're, you know, one of the smallest little dinkiest countries, like that. And the best part about it is within it. Is, you know, as British, then they're the whole island and stuff, but as English, then the other three parts of Britain don't really like the British. You know, they just don't identify. The Irish, the Welsh, and the Scottish don't identify as English. Yeah, yeah. Some of them, I think Scotland even has its own money. Yeah. Like that. Like that. You can use both, but I'm saying, but they have their own. Like that. Gandhi's propaganda was that India should return to making her own cloth, using simple spinning machines and hand looms, thus completely boycotting the British-made cloth and attacking an economic brace of Britain's power over India. Traveling by train throughout the country, Gandhi repeatedly appealed to his countrymen to reject all foreign cloth and wear only the simple coarse khadi produced from India's own cottage industry. Before the British rule, India had spun and woven her own cloth. Gandhi argued that by breaking the cottage industries, the British were sinking the Indian masses into semi-starvation and lifelessness. So that was the point the Americans were saying. Also, they supported Gandhi. He says, go back to your cottage industries. That's going to be your economic base. But somehow another, you know, and the industry was destroying India, but somehow another Nehru liked industry. Like that, so because he was, I think he was an atheist actually. To set the example, Gandhi himself worked daily at a primitive spinning wheel and wore only a simple coarse loincloth and shawl. He would hold meetings and ask people to come forth and reject their imported cloth. On the spot, people would throw down heaps of cloth and he would set it ablaze. Gandhi's wife complained that the khadi was too thick and not convenient to wear while cooking. She asked if while cooking she could wear the light British-made cloth. "Yes, you are free to cook with your mill cloth on," Gandhi had told her, "but I must exercise a similar freedom by not taking the meals so prepared." He was very stubborn. The cause of cottage industry appealed to Abhay. He too was not enamored with the modern industrial advances the British had introduced in India. Not only was simple living good for the long-term national economy of hundreds of millions of Indians, as Gandhi was emphasizing, but to Abhay it was also the way of life most conducive to spiritual culture. Abhay put aside his mill-manufactured cloth and took to wearing khadi. Now his dress revealed him to whomever he met, British and Indian alike. He was a nationalist, a sympathizer of revolution. To wear khadi in India in the early 1920s was not a mere clothing fad, it was a political statement. It meant he was a Gandhian. Next chapter, now we get to meeting Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Okay, yeah, so then, yeah. So Prabhupada is looking at it, even on the material platform, in the long range, is going to be the best economic, because cottage industries means everyone's engaged, while industry means people are not engaged. If you make it by hand, then you need a lot of people to make it. To make it with a machine, you only need one person to make a machine, to work a machine that can do the work of hundreds of people. So that means for every machine, so many people aren't engaged in work. So that means you're making the same, technically, amount of money, but only a few people have it. While the other way, the same amount of money is generated, but everybody has some. You understand? So long run, just for the benefit of the individuals, then the cottage industries was better. And then also it was closer, much more easy to establish that in along with the spiritual understanding like that. Because then from the spiritual understanding, that simple living and all that, it was easy. Everybody without great endeavor and all that could easily maintain themselves and be Krishna conscious. You understand? So that's the approach. It was supportive of spiritual, not that it in itself is inherently spiritual. Does that make sense? Yeah. No? Maybe. Very good. Okay. So ends here. And today is what?
Tuesday.
Okay. I think it's Tuesday and Ekadasi, right? Like that. The pumps are yeah, they're non-grain, right? Non-grain. So they can bump into the pumps and everything. Okay. Cool. Okay. And so then on Tuesday, then we'll hear about meeting Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
It just struck me. The green monsters are bumping into the pumps, which are also green. Is that the attraction? Is the greenness or something?
Family relations.
Something there. Yeah, is that it?